Reach Freaks. Invisible Choir explores detailed depictions of violence and murder and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
They're just evil, you know, of what they've done, and I don't think they'll ever change. I think they'll always be monsters, and that's what they are to me. That's my feelings with them. They're just a pair of monsters.
Just after 3 p.m. the afternoon of Saturday, February 11th, 2023, a woman and her husband were out walking their two dogs through Colchester Linear Park in Warrington, England, and suddenly they came across a teenage girl bleeding out. The victim was found face down, sprawled out halfway down a staircase in the woods. She was wearing a skirt, white stockings, and the hood of her white sweatshirt was drawn tightly over her head and was completely soaked in blood. At 3:13 p.m., the woman walking her dogs dialed 999. The emergency call has never been released publicly. However, the following voice reenactment is comprised of actual portions of the official transcript.
I'm at Colchester Linear Park, and somebody has been attacked. We've seen the attackers run away, and she's uncon. Well, I think they are the attackers. They've run away from the body. She's very hurt, and we need the ambulance and police, and you'll probably need the air ambulance because of where she is.
Okay, and it's Colchester Linear Park in Warrington?
Yeah, in Warrington. And if you go to the main car park at Colchester Linear Park and walk forwards, it's about half a mile down there, so you will need either a heli team or a heli med.
What's happened? Have they been hit?
I don't know. She's halfway down some stairs. She's bleeding heavily, and she's just hardly responsive at all. But the attackers have run towards Colchester Linear car park, and I can describe them clearly to you because I was really suspicious of them. I don't feel very safe. She's bleeding, she's got blood on her legs, she's got blood on her back. She's really hurt.
The caller can be heard stating that she believes the attack had occurred just seconds before they'd come across the wounded victim, and that the individuals responsible may have in fact just run past them, headed in the complete opposite direction.
Okay, and she's on the stairs at the Colchester Linear Park, this girl.
Yeah, she is, yeah. Yeah, we thought it was a dummy at first. Her face is really badly hurt, and I don't want to touch her either.
Is somebody with her at the moment?
We're stood by. But I don't know if she's alive. She's got heavy bleeding from her back, but her face is all. She did twitch before, but I don't want to touch her. It's an absolute mess. Oh, God.
Okay, just take some deep breaths. And do you think she's been hit by people?
I think she's been attacked severely. Her face, her back, she may have even been stabbed. There's blood coming out of her back. I am just going to try and stop people coming down here. Oh my God.
Okay.
Oh my God.
And what did these suspects look like?
There was a girl and a boy. I'd say they were late teens. They both had long dark curly hair. One had their hood up with their hair protruding and like a red check jacket on. And they saw us and they ran.
Right, late teens, long black curly hair.
Yeah, dark curly hair, one had their hood up hair protruding like a red check jacket on,
Right.
And they ran past me.
Late teens, black long curly hair.
Yeah, and I would say about 5 feet 7 inches, or 5 feet 8 inches.
The woman went on to provide a detailed description of the two teens she witnessed running from the scene. She described both as white. The female was seen wearing a long red winter puffer jacket. The other, a male, was wearing what appeared to be a black jacket or dark-colored sweatshirt with the hood drawn over his head. The woman then informs dispatch that she began walking toward the parking lot to direct EMS upon arrival, while her husband remained by the victim's side. The teen appears to have been stabbed several times, as blood was seen pouring from multiple puncture wounds around her back, upper body, and face. Dispatch continues to ask questions in order to keep the caller on the line.
And is she breathing? I need to update ambulance.
I don't think she is, and I can see her face. It's covered in blood, so I don't want to do anything to her, because it's awful.
She's not breathing.
I don't know. She's twitched, but I don't know. She's in such a mess. But we can't touch her.
Okay, we're going to get help to you.
The woman then informs dispatch that she is in fact certified in first aid, but the scene was so horrific, that she was physically unable to render help.
Okay, and she's not moving whatsoever. You can't see her stomach moving or her chest.
No, we couldn't. That's not to say that she isn't breathing. She looks dead. The way her body is lying and everything.
She looks dead.
Yeah.
The first officer arrived on scene 12 minutes after that initial 999 call went out at around 3:25 p.m. and desperately tried to save the teenage girl's life. Minutes later, the ambulance arrived, followed by a med helicopter that landed in a nearby field. Despite everyone's best efforts, it was too late, and what the woman had already told the dispatchers was true. The victim was pronounced dead at the scene at approximately 4:02 p.m. as a result of what could only be described as a ferocious and utterly relentless stabbing. Soon after, the victim's body was recovered from Kulchev Linear Park and identification was made. The deceased was a 16-year-old Birchwood Community High School student named Brianna Jai. Brianna was transgender, and it was unclear at this stage in the investigation if this was in fact a hate crime. At the time of her death, Brianna had long been an advocate for the gay and trans communities. She had amassed an impressive following of tens of thousands online, specifically on TikTok.
These are like the only heels I have, and they're too big for me. And like, I wore them through a wedding, and then I flew up everywhere. Like, they're very, very big. Like, I don't know how to show how tall they are.
Her videos revolved mostly around fashion, lip-syncing popular songs, makeup tutorials, showcasing new outfits, and perhaps most importantly, sharing encouraging words and affirmations to teens like herself who felt estranged from society. And while Brianna appeared confident and gregarious online, to those who knew her in real life, she was extremely shy. She'd suffered bouts with depression as well as an eating disorder in recent years. Brianna was also diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, and autism spectrum disorder. She came out as transgender in the 8th grade. One day, Brianna showed up to school wearing a wig and a skirt, and the rest was history. She came from a loving family and was supported by both parents in respect to how she identified. Her father Peter and mother Esther spoke briefly about who their daughter was sometime after the tragedy occurred, choosing to reflect on the person she was rather than the horrific way in which she lost her life.
Just a cheeky attitude. She was really funny, you know. Even if she was naughty as a toddler, young, you know, I could never tell her off because she'd pull a funny face at me. And I had the memories I have, just how she used to do funny little dances and that. And obviously going into her older years, she was just a typical teenager, you know. Tried to put me in my place, and she was, as you can see, she was beautiful. She was talented with her makeup. You know, she wanted to do hair and beauty, you know, after she finished school.
She was an absolute character. She was very outgoing. She loved attention. She was so funny as well, and I miss her laughter so much. Like, I miss her coming down, and even she was just a normal teenager, and I even miss the grief that she gave me. But yeah, so we miss her so much.
Tragically, Brianna was stripped of any chance at growing into the person she was destined to be, including fulfilling one of her many dreams of one day becoming a licensed therapist. An autopsy eventually revealed that Brianna had been stabbed a total of 28 times, the majority of which were inflicted to her face, head, chest, neck, and back. Some of the more significant injuries were recorded as being as deep as 4 inches, several ultimately puncturing her heart. Brianna was observed with several defensive wounds to her arms and hands as well, some so deep that they'd damaged her bones. In addition to the 2 dog walkers who notified the police, there were also several more witnesses who recalled seeing Brianna with 2 young adults that day in the park, but none who saw the actual stabbing. In terms of physical evidence located at the scene, there wasn't much. However, there were abandoned bottles of soda discovered not far from Brianna's body, 1 Coca-Cola and 1 Dr. Pepper. Both bottles were subsequently bagged as evidence and were to be tested for DNA. The morning after the murder, Cheshire Police held a press conference that Sunday, on February 12, 2023. Chief Superintendent Mike Evans urged anyone with information surrounding Brianna Jai's death to come forward.
Shortly after 3:15 yesterday afternoon, the body of 16-year-old Brianna Jai was discovered in this park. Gianna had been stabbed several times. And now obviously an investigation is underway to try and find her killers and bring them to justice. I'm appealing to two key individuals, a male who's described as late teens, early 20s. He was wearing a long, dark coat, possibly thicker material. We think he had long, dark, curly hair under a hood, who was in the local area. And likewise, a female who was with him. She again had, they were both white. She again, late teens, early 20s, had long, dark hair. And she's described as wearing a purple or red patch blanket jacket, long in length, with a long skirt or dress flowing underneath that. At this moment in time, we think this is an isolated incident. We've got a large number of detectives working on it, and they will see an increased presence in the area, be that officers searching or officers on high visibility patrol. That's just to reassure people, and I just ask, don't speculate at this time. We are following all sorts of lines of inquiry, and we will update you as and when we make progress.
What Cheshire Police weren't releasing to the public, though, was that they'd already made a great deal of progress in their investigation, just hours after the murder occurred, a lot of which could be attributed to the victim's mother. Brianna's mother, Esther Jai, was notified a few hours after Brianna was killed, and after police arrived at her door, through tears, she was eventually able to inform them of some critical information. Her mother knew that Brianna had plans to meet up with at least one person that day, a 15-year-old fellow classmate of hers named Scarlett Jenkinson. Brianna's mother had no knowledge of the boy they were allegedly with and had no idea who the individual was. Though cell phone records wouldn't become fully available to the authorities until sometime later, Snapchats, WhatsApp messages, and texts would prove to be instrumental and bringing Brianna's killers to justice. This episode is proudly brought to you by Wildgrain. All right, if you've been listening, you already know my family loves Wildgrain. We get one box a month, and we use them primarily for larger meals or family get-togethers when we need to spruce the meal up a little bit and have a little bit more for our guests. But what is it? Wildgrain is the first ever bake-from-frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, and there's no thawing required. You literally just preheat the oven, bake for 25 minutes or less, let it cool off, and serve. That's it. That's why we love the breads and the chocolate chunk cookies. We actually are taking a loaf of sourdough bread to my brother's house this evening for a little impromptu get-together, and it's nice to have some fresh baked bread. If bread isn't your thing, you can now fully customize your Wildgrain box, so you can choose any combination of breads, pastas, or pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. So give them a try. For a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box, when you go to wildgrain.com/choir to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box, and $30 off your first box, when you go to wildgrain.com/choir. That's wildgrain.com/choir, or you can use promo code choir at checkout. A shout out to all my honeys. Support for today's episode also comes from Honey Love. Whether you're a bride, a wedding guest, a true crime podcaster, or simply seeking everyday smoothing, Honey Love is the go-to for all things shapewear. Now, my wife's got a little extra curve on her, and frankly, that's one of the many things I absolutely love about her. But I've also seen her struggle to find effective, comfortable shapewear that doesn't leave her covered in her own sweat or grooves from where the underwires are digging into her back. That's just one of the many reasons she loves Honey Love shapewear. They feature lingerie-inspired design details that she'll want to show off, and they're made with breathable fabric that keeps you nice and cool no matter the activity. Now, if you're interested, you gotta look at Honey Love's best-selling Superpower Short because it's the way to go. They've got targeted compression technology that distinguishes between areas where you want a little more support and areas you may need a little less compression. And their Signature X targets and sculpts your midsection without squeezing your natural curves. It's designed to work with your body, not against it. Not only is the Superpower Short helping my wife, but it's helping ladies everywhere sculpt and smooth from stomach to thigh by offering just the perfect amount of compression. And I gotta tell you, her confidence levels have been through the roof lately, which is just tickling, and I'd love to see it. If you want to give them a try, treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/choir. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/choir. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Move with confidence thanks to Honeylove. The morning of the murder on February 11th, 2023, at 9:25 a.m., Brianna's friend from school, Scarlett Jenkinson, messaged her the plan for the day. According to the exchange, Brianna and Scarlett had planned to take drugs and drink alcohol in the park that day. Through messaging, Scarlett instructed Brianna to take a bus from her home to the Colchester Library Station near the park. Investigators ultimately recovered surveillance footage from Brianna's doorbell camera as well, which showed her leaving her Birchwood Cheshire home at about 12:45 p.m. on Saturday, February 11th. With cell phone in hand, Brianna can be seen in the video text messaging as she walks out of her front gate. She's pictured wearing the same skirt, stockings, and white hooded sweatshirt she would ultimately be found in a few short hours later. It was later confirmed that Brianna was texting her mother at the time she was captured leaving the home to let her know that she was heading to the bus stop to meet Scarlett and that she'd taken care of the dogs before she left. About an hour later, Brianna is seen on CCTV again, this time boarding a city bus at 1:37 p.m. It was bus number 28, which, in the worst form of tragic irony, just so happened to be the same number of stab wounds Brianna ultimately sustained. Moments later, the vehicle's interior camera shows Brianna boarding the bus and texting again. The door then closes, and the bus begins traveling along its route. From a different angle, bus surveillance cameras show Brianna with her hood drawn over her head as she sits in a nearby seat. Investigators later learned that she was sending the following text message to her mother.
I'm on the bus by myself. I'm scared.
According to Brianna's mother, Esther, her daughter's fears in that moment were strictly related to riding on public transportation, something that Brianna almost never did. Her mother would later tell police that at the time, she was proud of Brianna for making an effort to step out of her comfort zone and to try to socialize with a friend outside of school. Then at 1:53 p.m., CCTV shows Brianna's bus arriving at the Colchester Library stop. She's then seen exiting the bus before surveillance video captures her yet again from a different angle on the street. Seconds later, Brianna is seen as she's greeted by a girl wearing a red winter puffer jacket, soon to be identified as 15-year-old Scarlett Jenkinson. Scarlett and Brianna are then seen walking down the sidewalk toward the park. However, another individual is also seen in that footage, a male figure wearing a black hooded sweatshirt. It's hard to tell from the video, but it almost looks as if he's trying to hide at first, as he's seen awkwardly standing several yards away from the girls, partially obscured behind a tree to the girl's right. In a very unnatural manner, the male in the black hoodie suddenly begins walking toward them and approaches Brianna from behind. Indicated by her body language, Brianna looks surprised and is seen taking a step back the moment she notices the boy. From the video footage alone, it appears as if Brianna was not aware that a third person would be joining them, or that she even knew who this person was at all. Even so, Brianna, Scarlett Jenkinson, and the now unknown male continue along their way until they eventually walk out of the camera's field of view. Minutes later, all three are captured again on CCTV at approximately 2:02 p.m., just before entering the park. This was the last time Brianna Jai was seen alive on camera again. A complete timeline of Brianna Jai's last known digital activity would later prove that she sent Scarlett the following message on Snapchat just moments after the group had entered the park.
Girl, I'ma wait where I am until we have drugs, LOL. I'm too anxious.
This message was sent at 2:15 p.m., and despite the fact that Brianna and Scarlett were sitting right next to each other at the time, they continued quietly messaging each other. And for the next 45 minutes, Scarlett then proceeded to send Snapchat messages to an account she claimed belonged to her drug dealer, as all three sat on a park bench. During that time, Brianna Jai appeared to have become suspicious of Scarlett, perhaps figuring out that there never was a drug dealer or drugs on the way, as indicated by this message sent by Brianna to a different friend.
Scarlett is so weird. I think she's pretending to have a dealer.
At approximately 3:06 p.m., the very last message from Brianna's cell phone was sent out to Scarlett Jenkinson.
Girl, where are you?
A digital extraction of Brianna's device would later reveal that this message was deleted from her phone moments after it was sent. And it wouldn't be more than 7 minutes later when Brianna was found in a pool of her own blood, and the teen alleged to be Scarlett Jenkinson and that unknown male were seen running out of the park. Then at 3:15 p.m., 2 minutes after the 999 emergency call went out, recovered police dash cam footage captured the female in the red jacket and the male figure walking down the sidewalk away from the crime scene. Minutes later, CCTV from the interior of a different city bus also captured the male suspect's face for the very first time. His black hood is still seen draped over his head. However, his face isn't covered and is recorded in high definition, and appeared to be slightly younger than the initial reports of a male in his late teens. The male teen is then seen on video wiping something red from his hand, consistent with the color of blood. Roughly 24 hours after Brianna Jai was murdered, law enforcement received another vital tip, this time from Scarlett Jenkinson's mother. Once the news had broken of the attack, a friend of Scarlett's messaged her online. She confronted her and said she actually saw her with Brianna in the park the day of the murder. Scarlett responded back by admitting that she was with Brianna, but only for about 15 minutes. She then went on to fabricate a story, claiming that Brianna left the park after she had received a text message from, quote, some lad in Manchester, and that she just disappeared after that. More than likely realizing she had been caught, Scarlett then tried to get ahead of the problem by telling her mother the same story. Naturally, her mother wasn't buying it, and after admitting that she had in fact been with Brianna Jai on the day she was killed, Scarlett's own mother immediately called police just before 5 p.m. on February the 12th. The suspect's mother also provided police with the name of the male teen they were with that day, Scarlett's old pal, 15-year-old Eddie Ratcliffe. At 5:52 p.m. the evening of February 12th, Scarlett sent the following message to her friend Eddie, almost 1 hour after her mother called the police.
I haven't gone to the station, but my mom phoned police. Make sure her story adds up. Say to police everything. We met Brianna at 1:30, walked to Lanier and sat and chilled on the bench. Then Brianna looked at her phone and said she was going to meet some lad and walked off.
At 6:25 p.m., Scarlett Jenkinson brazenly posted to her Snapchat story. It was a screenshot of Brianna, accompanied by dove emojis, along with a caption that read,
"Rest in peace. Brianna was one of the best people I've ever met and such an amazing friend. It's so f***ing sickening what got done to her."
Almost an hour later, just after 7:30 p.m. that evening, 15-year-old Scarlett Jenkinson was arrested at her home.
Scarlett, this is what I've got to say.
Yeah.
At this moment, you are under arrest on suspicion of murder.
How come I'm a suspect?
How come you're a suspect?
Because I'm the last person I've seen her, is it?
Meanwhile, a few kilometers away in the town of Lee, 15-year-old Eddie Ratcliffe was arrested at his parents' house at nearly the exact same time.
You Eddie?
Yeah.
Eddie, you're a lot of suspicion of murder, all right?
I can't explain it.
No, listen.
Right, listen.
You don't have to say anything, but you may harm your defense if you don't mention when questioned. So you later land in court, and if you do say we have evidence, do you understand?
Yeah, well, it's just unlock these.
A boy and girl, both aged 15, have been arrested on suspicion of murder following the death of a 16-year-old girl in Warrington, Cheshire. Police say Brianna Jai was found by members of the public in a park on Saturday afternoon. Brianna was transgender, but detectives said there was no evidence to suggest her murder was a hate crime.
When Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Radcliffe were questioned separately, they both tried to point the finger at one another. Eddie, in particular, told the police that Scarlett was the sole party responsible for the killing, and that she'd murdered Brianna while he was off in the distance, urinating against a tree. 3 days after their arrest, Jenkinson and Radcliffe were officially charged with murder on February 15, 2023. However, due to their age, preliminarily, their identities were to be protected per UK law. As far as the public information went, Radcliffe and Jenkinson were referred to only as Boy Y and Girl X in regards to their alleged involvement in the murder. To provide a brief background on why this is, in the United Kingdom, you have Youth Court and the Crown Court, much like Superior Court versus Juvenile Court in the States. In the Youth Court system, preserving the identity of a suspect under the age of 18 is automatic by law. In the Crown Courts, however, where more serious crimes such as murder are tried, the decision to release the name or names of the accused is solely at the judge's discretion, despite the defendant's age. Whether or not anonymity for certain individuals is to be preserved also hinges greatly on the defendant's potential future rehabilitation. Protecting any killer's identity would naturally make potential rehabilitation and possible reintegration back into society much easier for the accused. Understandably, this is a huge debate in the UK, and many see this kind of treatment as an undeserved courtesy to otherwise violent youth offenders such as Brianna Jai's killers, and that instead, they should be exposed. As it pertains to this case, Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Radcliffe were to remain behind bars in a youth detention center held without bond and away from the public eye for the foreseeable future. This episode is proudly brought to you by Squarespace. Like, if you're a small business owner, a podcaster, influencer, or someone who's built a career on a brand, then you need a beautiful, responsive website to connect with your listeners, customers, or potential clients. That's why I've been using Squarespace exclusively for website design for years, including on our primary website at invisiblechoir.com. Squarespace is kind of an all-in-one website design and e-commerce platform. They have so many creative features built right in to help you launch your site and do it within minutes. They've even got flexible templates built right in, created by professionals with designs for just about every category, so you can customize your look, update content, and add features that fit your needs while maintaining a clean, professional look. They've also got a handy asset library so you can upload, organize, and manage all of your files from one central hub. But the feature we probably use the most at InvisibleChoir.com is Squarespace's amazing blogging tools. They have a powerful blogging tool built right in that allows you to share your stories, photos, videos, updates, and even your latest podcast episodes. It's super easy to use, and that's why I absolutely love it. So if you're ready to take your brand to the next level, head on over to squarespace.com/choir for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use promo code CHOIR to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/choir and use promo code CHOIR to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. This episode is also proudly brought to you by Fabric by Gerber Life. Look, anyone who knows me behind the scenes away from the podcast knows how I talk about time. Time is the one resource that constrains us all. I mean, there's literally only so much of it in each day. A part of that time should be spent planning for a future that involves you not being there and having a plan in place to protect your family's financial livelihood. I've lost a lot of relatives unexpectedly, including my own father. And the fact that he had a term life insurance policy that none of us knew about until after he died took so much stress out of a very chaotic and heartbreaking time. Frankly, it's the reason I've prioritized having a good term life insurance policy in place for the day I may no longer be here. Fabric by Gerber Life was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. And you could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. So use your time wisely and plan ahead. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/invisible. That's meetfabric.com/invisible. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/invisible. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Upon searching the homes of the two suspects, several key pieces of evidence were discovered, including the murder weapon. Inside Eddie Ratcliffe's residence, a hunting knife was found, and on the blade was the obvious presence of blood, later confirmed to be that of the victim, Brianna Jai. Various blood-soaked items of clothing were also found during the search, including Eddie's sneakers and dark-colored jacket. When Scarlett Jenkinson's home was raided, police didn't find any bloody clothing, but they did find a butcher's knife. Blood was located on the blade of that knife. However, when it was eventually tested for DNA, it wasn't Brianna's blood, but instead, it was Scarlett's. Several handwritten notes and lists were discovered in Scarlett Jenkinson's bedroom as well, a full binder's worth, in fact. And among the countless loose-leaf pages was a document that seemed to demonstrate Scarlett's affinity toward infamous serial killers including Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy, and the Night Stalker Richard Ramirez. Another list found written in Scarlett's handwriting appeared to be her unique interpretation of all the different types of serial killers that existed in the world.
Organized, disorganized, organized and disorganized, crime spree, mass murderer, psychopathic sexual sadist, custodial, psychotic, organized crime, copycat.
She also wrote down characteristics one might find in these various types of killers.
Superficially charming, but demonstrate cruelty to animals, fire setting, bedwetting beyond the age of 5.
In another note, Scarlett listed the qualities of her soon-to-be co-defendant, Eddie Ratcliffe.
Trustworthy, funny, sociopath, good sense of humor, genius level, not sociable.
As investigators sifted through the writings, their contents only got worse. One of the more alarming pages was a hit list that Scarlett Jenkinson wrote, entitled, People That Need to Go.
Give them alcohol with sleeping pills, slit throat, dismember body, place pieces in bin bags, bury bags 7 feet underground.
A large roll of trash bags was also discovered in the bedroom, and the hit list included the initials of at least 5 individuals, aside from Brianna Jai. And those names were later identified to be students Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe both resented from school. The handwritten notes found in Scarlett Jenkinson's room appeared to be never-ending, but the most damning, as it pertained to the homicide of Brianna Jai, was a piece of ripped-out notebook paper with a smiley face and a heart scribbled along the top margin. And just below, written in blue ink, were the words, Saturday 11th, February 2023. Victim, Brianna Jai.
Plan. Meet Eddie at Wooden Post 1 p.m. Walk down to library bus stop. Wait until Brianna gets off the bus, then the three of us walk to Linear Park. Go to the pipe/tunnel area. I say code word to Eddie. He stabs her in the back as I stab her in the stomach. Eddie drags the body into the area. We both cover up the area with logs, etc.
The code word the two had agreed upon was the term gay, which was Eddie Ratcliffe's cue to begin the attack on Brianna. The two teens were unable to complete the last part of their plan of dragging her into the woods because Scarlett and Eddie were interrupted mid-stabbing, and when the dog walkers approached, they took off running. But that wasn't the end of their documented plan. As if these handwritten lists weren't enough, investigators located another page, which laid out an alternate plan to kill Brianna Jai.
get her to go to Linear Park. Go to the hidden spot near the bridge I usually go to. Someone jumps out and restrains her. Plan B, I kill her.
It was clear that a plan to murder Brianna and potentially several others had been in the works for some time. But what was the motive? Upon looking into the backgrounds of the alleged parties involved in this crime, investigators learned that prior to her murder, Brianna Jai had been placed in specialty classes at Birchwood High. Due to her anxiety, the majority of her learning took place in what were called inclusion rooms, where teachers worked with smaller groups of students in a more concentrated learning environment. According to her mother, Brianna had a difficult time returning to school after the pandemic, especially. Her teachers would often accompany Brianna when walking the halls and on trips to the bathroom. She wasn't too keen on sitting down with her peers in the cafeteria either, and much rather preferred to grab lunch and head straight back to her classroom to eat, where there was less noise and far fewer people. Just over a month into the 2023 school year, Brianna met 15-year-old Scarlett Jenkinson after she had transferred from nearby Colchith High School and was placed into the same inclusion room as Brianna. It's unclear if Scarlett revealed to anyone why she'd actually been transferred, but a few weeks before she got there, Scarlett Jenkinson had given a 13-year-old student cannabis-infused edibles while out on the playground one day. The incident occurred on September 27, 2022. Under the guise that they were regular candies, the young girl was hospitalized from the edibles Scarlett gave her. Thankfully, no long-term health complications came as a result, and luckily for Scarlett, the young girl's parents never pressed charges. Still, she was facing expulsion from Colchith High. After what faculty was calling a, quote, drug-spiking incident, Scarlett was presented with two options: transfer to Birchwood and keep her attendance rate at 96% or above, or be transferred back to Colchith to face the consequences and, more than likely, face being kicked out of school for good. However, according to her new teacher at Birchwood High, the staff were never made aware that Scarlett Jenkinson had actually tried to poison a girl at her previous school, and the only information they'd received upon her transfer was that she'd been caught with cannabis on school grounds and was being provided with a, quote, second chance at Birchwood. According to Scarlett's new teacher, Emma Mills, the 15-year-old's behavior at Birchwood raised zero cause for concern.
She was very quiet and she was very polite, and she agreed with all the targets that we set. And then around school, probably saw her a couple of times in those 10 weeks that she was here, and she would, you know, say hello. Again, came across as quite shy, but polite, and that was the general impression from the staff that worked with her in the short time that she was here as well.
Scarlett was a timid and unassuming student. In the beginning, she showed up to class on time, did her schoolwork, and for the most part kept to herself. But in addition to the poison attempt of a student at her previous school, Scarlett also had a history of self-harm, and at one point carved the name of the boy she was dating at the time into her own arm with a knife. And after roughly 6 weeks at Birchwood, Scarlett and Brianna got to talking after she'd complimented her on the eyeliner she was wearing one day in class. Given that there weren't many others in the inclusion room to talk to, a friendship soon formed between the two. Similarly to Brianna, Scarlett was rather antisocial herself, and the two seemed to relate over feelings of anxiety and alienation from their peers as two teens trying to navigate through high school. Scarlett and Brianna eventually exchanged telephone numbers as well as social media handles, and before long they began hanging out after school. It was around this time when Eddie Ratcliffe came into the picture. Eddie didn't know Brianna, but he was Scarlett's close friend of many years. The two had actually known each other since they were 11 years old. Eddie attended Colchith High, and after Scarlett transferred, the two kept in touch regularly, mostly through WhatsApp messaging. Eddie and Scarlett both came from hardworking and loving families. Her father was a professional builder and former director of an engineering company, while her mother worked as a home economics teacher. Eddie was one of four, He had three brothers and one sister. They grew up in an upper-middle-class home in the town of Lee, England. Eddie's mother worked as a ski instructor, as well as a graphic designer, while his father managed a trucking company. The photos can be found online of Eddie and his family enjoying expensive vacations they often took. By all accounts, Eddie's parents supported him in all of his interests and pursuits. He even once flew to Jamaica to watch him compete in a 2018 kickboxing tournament where he represented his country in nationals. Unlike his friend Scarlett, Eddie excelled academically. In fact, he was at the top of his class and had plans to study microbiology at university. According to phone records, Eddie and Scarlett's long-term friendship appeared to take a dark turn when she messaged him in private about the new girl she'd just met at Birchwood, Brianna Jai.
I'm obsessed over someone I know but don't have feelings for them. She's called Brianna. I don't know how to explain. Also, she has a dick, LOL.
This message was sent by Scarlett Jenkinson to Eddie Radcliffe on December 15th, 2022, roughly 2 months before Brianna was murdered. To reiterate, Eddie had never met Brianna, and from what investigators could tell, his first and only physical encounter with her was the day he took part in her murder. When Scarlett first told him about Brianna, the fact that she was transgender provoked an immediate sense of curiosity and interest. And before long, Eddie became as infatuated with Brianna Jai as Scarlett Jenkinson seemed to.
Is it a femboy or a tranny? Because the majority of people aren't trans. It's like going to a funeral and one person wears pink. You're going to be fascinated by their difference.
Eddie Radcliffe often referred to Brianna as it in his several correspondences with Scarlett. By January of 2023, the conversations between Eddie Radcliffe and Scarlett Jenkinson consisted mostly of Brianna Jai's gender, among other topics including serial killers and horror movies. Scarlett often spoke about the films Sweeney Todd, Insidious, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Child's Play. But somewhere along the line, talks between Eddie and Scarlett shifted to discussions and eventually fantasies about wanting to commit murder themselves. Scarlett began sending graphic images of blood and gore to Eddie, one of which was a photo of flesh hanging from a pair of scissors that she'd found on the internet. She went on to text Eddie, informing him that she had a desire to eat human flesh. And around this same time, Eddie and Scarlett began sharing frustrations and borderline hatred towards certain students at their respective schools. It was at this point the first of many hit lists were written. Collectively, Scarlett and Eddie composed a document containing several names of the people they wanted dead, one being a boy in Eddie's school who'd gotten a little too friendly with a girl he had a crush on at the time. Scarlett Jenkinson offered to take the initiative in regards to the issue, which ultimately became one of their first serious conversations about committing a murder.
If I do end up killing him, I have a really sharp blade, the same one that Sweeney Todd uses.
Investigators would later allege the knife Scarlett is referring to here is the butcher's knife that was found in her bedroom, one also used as an instrument for her self-harm. In another message about murdering the boy Eddie Radcliffe didn't like, Scarlett Jenkinson asked him the following.
If we kill him, can I keep some things? A couple of teeth and an eye?
In the weeks that followed, Radcliffe and Jenkinson shared ideas, methods, and materials they would need to kill one of the many victims who had made it onto their hit list. But at this point, they hadn't yet decided on who that person would be. While text messages, Snapchats, and the written documents later found in Scarlett Jenkinson's bedroom included the names of many, there was one individual she and Eddie always seemed to come back to. That was Brianna Jai. 19 days before the murder, Brianna became extremely ill on January 23, 2023. Shortly after returning to her mother's house that Monday, she began violently vomiting. Brianna's mother ran to her bedroom only to find her hanging off the side of the bed, rolling around in agony while crying out that she thought she was going to die. Brianna's mother thought she was regurgitating grape skins at the time. but it was later learned that Brianna had thrown up multiple outer coatings of pill tablets. Later that same day, Scarlett Jenkinson sent the following message to Eddie Ratcliffe.
People already know she's depressed and shit, so nobody would get sus, but for some reason, she has a high tolerance. Like, I gave her some today that should have been enough to kill her.
Scarlett was right about one thing. Brianna's mother indeed thought she had tried to commit suicide that day. But in reality, Scarlett Jenkinson tried to poison Brianna by giving her an excessive amount of ibuprofen gel capsules, possibly under the false impression that they were some kind of recreational drug. Several hours later, when Brianna's condition improved enough to the point where she could use her phone, she messaged Scarlett to tell her that she had gotten sick. Scarlett then messaged Eddie Ratcliffe to inform him.
She didn't die.
Brianna was out of school for multiple days after the failed poison attempt. While she was recovering at home in bed, Eddie messaged Scarlett, suggesting they take a different approach. He proposed they kill Brianna with the chemical sodium hydroxide by mixing it into a McDonald's milkshake for Brianna to drink. Sodium hydroxide, for those unfamiliar, is an odorless agent found in many heavy-duty cleaners, sometimes referred to as caustic soda or lye. Eddie proceeded to send a screenshot to Scarlett of the product and told her that the product containing this lethal combination could be easily purchased at their local Tesco grocery store. This was around the same time Scarlett changed Eddie's contact information in her phone to the name Tesco John Wick. And it was later revealed that Scarlett Jenkinson viewed Eddie Ratcliffe as a less attractive version of the main character of the 2014 film John Wick, where Keanu Reeves plays a hitman. 3 days after Scarlett tried to kill Brianna with ibuprofen, she and Eddie decided to shift their attention to a different victim on their hit list. On January 26th, Scarlett messaged Eddie about killing a boy she didn't like by luring him to Colchester Linear Park and stabbing him. They then went on to explore the option of hanging the boy, but after realizing that a 12-pound postage to purchase the rope was too expensive to ship, the idea was subsequently scratched, and it was back to the drawing board. In regard to the half-baked plot to murder this particular individual, Scarlett sent her co-conspirator Eddie Ratcliffe the following message.
If we can't get him tomorrow, we can kill Brianna.
Eddie agreed and responded by saying,
yeah, it'll be easier, and I want to see if it will scream like a man or a girl.
Whoever this intended target was, he unknowingly dodged the exact fate Brianna Jai ultimately reached in the days that followed. Thankfully, this boy had the wherewithal to avoid Scarlett's trap after she'd tried to lure him into the woods using a fake Instagram profile under the clever social media handle at the Cumlord. Cum spelt C-U-M. 2 days later, Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe officially turned their efforts back toward Brianna and would make their second attempt at murdering her on Saturday, January 28th.
Meet me at the wooden post in Linear at 12. We'll go over a plan again and I'll show you where I'm killing her. And then we both walk to the library to meet her and grab onto Brianna, slit her throat, and when she starts to fall, stab her in the back, then pass me the knife. I want to stab her at least once, even if she's dead, just because it's fun, lol. I want to see the pure horror on her face and hear her scream.
Scarlett reached out to Brianna the morning of January 28th, and they made plans to meet up at the library bus stop in Colchester later that day. But unbeknownst to Brianna, Eddie Ratcliffe had his mother drop him off at a station near his home in Lee, where he then caught a bus to Colchester to meet Scarlett. Before he arrived, he received the following message from her.
Oh, I'm f***ing pissed. Brianna just last minute said she can't come. She said she might be able to past 5.
Brianna had canceled their plans and essentially lived to see another day. Regardless, Scarlett and Eddie chose to use this opportunity to conduct what the prosecution would later refer to as a, quote, dry run for Brianna Jai's murder. At around 1 p.m. that afternoon, Eddie and Scarlett met at the Colchester Library bus stop. They then walked to Colchester Linear Park. The video evidence later recovered from Scarlett Jenkinson's cell phone showed footage of Eddie Ratcliffe underneath a bridge, about a 3-minute walk from where Brianna Jai's body would be found in less than 2 weeks' time. And after the two returned home that afternoon, Scarlett texted Eddie to inform him that Brianna wasn't going to make it out at all that day as a result of dinner plans she'd made with her family. She then went on to reassure her partner that they'd reconvene and try again in the coming days. On Monday, January 30th, Scarlett Jenkinson sent Eddie Radcliffe another message, this time suggesting they administer a lethal dose of cocaine to kill Brianna Jai. Perhaps realizing that the price of cocaine would cost them much more than a $15 rope, Scarlett changed her mind once again.
Well, let's just stab her. It's more fun.
On February 3rd, 2023, 10 days before the murder, Scarlett Jenkinson snapped a photograph of the handwritten plan to kill Brianna Jai and sent it to Eddie Radcliffe. The next day, Scarlett's teacher notified the superintendent at her previous school, more than likely due to the fact that she'd become fully engrossed with planning a murder. Scarlett Jenkinson had lost all focus on her schoolwork by this point, as she'd stopped showing up to school and her attendance dropped to 80%, which, per the agreement, meant she was going to be sent back to Colchith High and more than likely expelled for good. It was at this point Scarlett appeared to become desperate. She messaged Eddie incessantly about the murder, and Eddie Radcliffe himself began showing slight hesitation during this period, and at one point told his friend he couldn't murder Brianna due to the fact that it was a school night. In that same message, Eddie told Scarlett that he didn't want to risk bringing a knife to school that day. Days later, the week of the murder, the following text exchange occurred.
I'm excited about Saturday.
Eddie replied by asking Scarlett why she was so enthused before it eventually dawned on him.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
When Saturday, February the 11th, finally came around, Scarlett messaged Eddie to remind him to wear proper running shoes and outerwear in the event they had to make a swift getaway after killing Brianna. Scarlett had already set her trap, and plans to meet Brianna with the intention of doing cocaine and getting drunk in the woods that afternoon had already been established. Throughout the morning, Scarlett messaged Eddie several times, inquiring about the knife he was planning to bring. Scarlett was sure to ask he was certain the blade would kill her, and Eddie reassured her that it would. After all three had finally made it to the park that day, they sat on a bench along the walking trail, occupied by runners and dog walkers, in broad daylight in the middle of the afternoon. Scarlett proceeded to pretend to be messaging a non-existent drug dealer about the cocaine. Before uttering the code word gay to Eddie, Scarlett took one last photo of her victim while she was still alive, as Brianna sat on the park bench texting on her cell phone. Moments later, Scarlett said the code word and Eddie tackled Brianna to the ground. He then produced a 5-inch hunting knife and stabbed her 3 to 4 times. He then handed the blade to Scarlett, and as Brianna attempted to get away, stumbling toward the staircase and raising her hands in defense, Scarlett Jenkinson proceeded to inflict the remaining 20-plus stab wounds upon her victim, before the pair eventually noticed the dog walkers approaching. In that moment, they fled, leaving Brianna Jai for dead, just after 3 o'clock the afternoon of Saturday, February 11th, 2023. In the wake of Brianna Jai's horrific murder, activists and supporters of the LGBTQ community assembled across the UK, arguably like never before, in an effort to bring attention to an event the Cheshire Police had yet to label a hate crime.
There hasn't been vigils like this before. I mean, in the space of 48, 72 hours, we've had 40, 50 odd vigils planned nationwide, and they've been well attended. And the reason for that is because people realise that this isn't just about gender identity. You know, yes, she was transgender, but that's just one facet of Brianna's person. She was somebody's daughter. She had a life ahead of her. And, you know, just by being herself, by being visible, she was tragically taken away.
In regards to the anonymity of the accused killers, Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Radcliffe's identities remained Boy Y and Girl X, and the media for almost a year after the murder. When the two finally saw their day in court in December of 2023, the jury was presented with an overwhelming amount of evidence to consider. The court learned that while Scarlett Jenkinson was behind bars awaiting trial, she was provided internet access. Access she used to Google the murder of Brianna Jai, as well as her own name. Scarlett was also overheard by the youth detention staff bragging about how famous she was going to be. A staff member testified in court to say that this was one of the only times they'd witnessed Scarlett show any emotion behind bars, which was described as a genuine happiness in relation to what she had done. In addition, the court heard that while Scarlett Jenkinson was locked up, she was asked by staff members if she felt any remorse for the killing, to which she responded with the following.
I did for 2 hours. Now I don't give a fuck. I'd do it again.
It appeared as though these remarks had been more than just a braggadocious threat. The reason being that while Scarlett Jenkinson was in that youth detention center, she'd created yet another hit list. Only this time it was members of the jail staff she wanted dead, as opposed to former classmates of hers. While in jail, Scarlett also admitted that she became sexually aroused during the planning stages of Brianna Jai's murder. She also admitted to taking great joy in the act itself, specifically in her ability to physically overpower Brianna the day she and Eddie killed her. The original handwritten hit lists, as well as screenshots of the since-deleted WhatsApp exchanges between the two defendants, were also presented in court, including even more messages that were sent hours after the killing. At 11 p.m. the night of the murder, Scarlett Jenkinson texted Eddie Ratcliffe to ask him if he was nervous about getting caught, to which he said, quote,
"Probably."
The jury then heard Scarlett Jenkinson's response to her co-defendant's concerns at the time.
"You're not going to get caught. Don't worry. The police are shite here."
Eddie Ratcliffe's search history was also presented in court. And about 8 hours after the murder, Eddie typed the phrase, quote, "six ways to calm your fight or flight response" into his web browser. And just like she wished to do with one of her intended male victims, Scarlett Jenkinson expressed wanting to take a trophy from Brianna Jai. The court heard testimony regarding her desire to keep one of Brianna's, quote, "pretty eyes" in one of the thousands of messages she sent to Eddie Ratcliffe. The court also heard more details regarding Scarlett Jenkinson's upbringing and how at the age of 14, she began using a Tor browser to access torture and actual death footage on the dark web. Scarlett had also sent some of these videos to Eddie Ratcliffe during the planning of Brianna's murder. Another crucial fact the state established was that neither defendant had any medical history or diagnoses prior to the murder that would have contributed to this inhumane act. It was only after the two had been arrested that they were psychologically evaluated for the first time, at which point Scarlett Jenkinson was found to have, quote, "traits of ADHD and autism," though she was clinically diagnosed with neither. She was, however, deemed to suffer a form of antisocial personality disorder, but not mental illness. The court heard testimony from the psychiatrist who had evaluated Scarlett Jenkinson following her arrest, the one who established that she also suffered from what's called a conduct dissocial disorder with limited prosocial emotions. The psychiatrist elaborated by stating, despite these findings, Scarlett Jenkinson was well aware that the months of planning Brianna Jai's murder was wrong, and that she was fully conscious in her decision-making and in following through with it. Most notably, Jenkinson's psychiatrist told the court that she admitted to killing Brianna during one of their therapy sessions. When she was asked why she murdered her classmate, Scarlett told the psychiatrist that she was afraid of losing Brianna as a friend, explaining that if she killed her and took a body part as a souvenir, she could never leave her in a sense. On the stand, the psychiatrist noted the language Jenkinson used in this rationale was similar to that of Jeffrey Dahmer's, one of the many serial killers Jenkinson admired, who also kept body parts as trophies from his victims. As far as Eddie Radcliffe goes, the results of his psych evaluation behind bars concluded with a diagnosis of autism, along with a high level of social anxiety and selective mutism. Following his arrest, Ratliff became less and less verbal in the several months leading up to his trial. And during the actual court proceedings, he was provided toys to help calm his anxiety, including a fidget spinner and a puzzle. And he focused his attention on a Sudoku booklet as the jury listened to the gruesome details surrounding the deadly knife attack. Eddie Radcliffe was allowed to respond to questions from his lawyers as well as the prosecution using a computer, by typing out his comments, which were then displayed on a projection screen for the jury. Eddie Radcliffe's father attended most of the trial, while his mother was present every day. His parents were seen together on occasion, in a visible state of shock as they heard some of the acts their son was accused of committing, read aloud for the very first time. Despite Radcliffe's diagnosis, the psychiatrist who evaluated him also testified and offered the professional opinion that, like his co-defendant Scarlett Jenkinson, he too knew the gravity and severity of both the planning of Brianna Jai's murder, as well as his involvement in the act itself. And while the evidence in this case was vast, jurors also learned that the murder weapon was purchased by Eddie Radcliffe 6 weeks prior to the killing, for the cost of £13.50. The 5-inch hunting knife was obtained by Radcliffe while he was on vacation, skiing with his family in Bulgaria. And along with Brianna Jai's blood having been found on the hunting blade, the 2 soda bottles that were left at the crime scene also came back positive for the presence of both Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Radcliffe's DNA. When it came time for the jury to deliver their verdict, they ultimately agreed that Scarlett Jenkinson was the ringleader in a crime fueled by sexual sadism and a long-lasting desire to kill, while Eddie Radcliffe was enlisted as a vulnerable accomplice, someone who was partially motivated by an underlying resentment toward Brianna Jai's gender identity. In the end, Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Radcliffe were both found guilty of murder in the stabbing death of 16-year-old Brianna Jai. Brianna Jai's mother and father briefly addressed the media that day outside of the courthouse.
Brianna was larger than life. She was funny, witty, and fearless. We miss Brianna so much, and our house feels empty without her laughter. To know how scared my usually fearless child must have been when she was alone in that park with someone that she called her friend will haunt me forever.
It's difficult to comprehend how some people can do these vile things in the world and don't understand how cruel and heartbreaking their actions can be. The impact on Brianna's death has not just affected me as her father, but also my whole family. My heart bleeds every day for Brianna, and this will never go away. And the mental guilt I have can sometimes be unbearable, but I will ensure her memory lives on in my thoughts and dreams.
Even after the 2 teenage killers were convicted, they were still being referred to as Boy Y and Girl X by the media. Criminal and human rights attorney Kirsty Bermlow broke down why this was the case, even after a guilty verdict had been reached. She explained the factors the judge would be forced to consider when deciding whether or not the identities of the juvenile killers would be further protected, or if Boy Y and Girl X would finally be exposed to the world.
Currently, there's an anonymity around any identification of those 2 defendants. And the judge is going to weigh up the welfare of the children, will weigh up their privacy, but also will weigh up the principle, which is usually the principle of open justice. So that means looking at the public interest, looking at the interests of justice, and carry out a balancing exercise on whether this is a case where the identity of those 2 children should be published.
After Brianna's killers were convicted, her mother Esther expressed that she'd rather have their identities released so the family can attempt to put this horrible tragedy behind them.
When they are 18, the names will be released anyway. I think that So it's inevitable, and we might as well just get it all done in one go, the sentencing, release the names, and then we can hopefully like move forward and do something more positive. It's that like sense of closure, really, for me and my family.
At a joint sentencing hearing held almost a year to the day after Brianna Jai was murdered, the judge offered a few parting words to both Jenkinson and Ratcliffe, noting that autism spectrum specifically did not outweigh the aggravating factors of this case.
Taking the evidence as a whole, I find that the impact of your ASD on your culpability is limited. I do not doubt that transferring to prison when you are an adult will be difficult. Prison is more difficult for those who are neurodiverse. Your behaviour in custody has been good so far, and it is clear from the pre-sentence report that there is a hope that you may one day be rehabilitated. You must continue to work towards that. I have weighed all the aggravating and mitigating factors that apply to each of you. Although I have taken the same starting point, I have concluded that the final minimum terms must be different. In Scarlett's case, the aggravating features are significant and would have led to a substantial uplift to the starting point, but for the mitigation, particularly that relating to maturity and mental disorder. There must still be an uplift, but it will be moderated. In Eddie's case, I find that the balance to be struck between aggravating factors, which are not quite as high as in Scarlett's case, and the mitigation I have identified is such as to cancel each other out. In saying that, I have taken account of all the medical evidence and accept the diagnosis of ASD has some impact, but the extent to which it reduced your culpability in the circumstances of this offending is limited. This was undoubtedly a very serious offence with multiple aggravating factors. That is the context in which I impose minimum terms, which are lengthy for offenders of your age, albeit significantly less than an equivalent sentence for an adult. The parole board will have to decide if and when either or both of you can be released. That will only happen if you no longer pose a danger. If you are released, you will remain on license for life and you may be recalled to prison. I will now sentence each of you. You may remain seated. In both cases, the relevant statutory surcharge will apply. Scarlett Jenkinson, for the murder of Brianna Jai, you will be detained at His Majesty's pleasure. I set the minimum term at 22 years, less the 352 days that you have spent on remand. Eddie Ratcliffe, for the murder of Brianna Jai, you will be detained at His Majesty's pleasure. I set the minimum term at 20 years, less the 352 days that you have spent on remand.
Following the sentencing, the anonymity ban was lifted, and Eddie Ratcliffe and Scarlett Jenkinson's names were released to the world for the first time since this tragedy occurred roughly 1 year before. Brianna's father, Peter, was interviewed by Sky News around that same time. He was asked his opinion regarding whether or not his daughter's killers should have been publicly identified and how his thought process on the matter had evolved over time.
Well, at first, you know, I thought, yeah, they should be named. Why should they be protected? You know, people should know who they are. And now I think now when they will be named, you know, the name's always going to be connected, you know, tied with Brianna all the time. So I just think they shouldn't be named. I think they should just be forgot about, locked up, and not even spoke about again, because they're nothing.
Peter went on to describe just some of the hardships his family has endured, having learned all of the disturbing details from trial, including the deceptive measures that were taken in planning and carrying out Brianna's murder.
Every day I think about it, you know, the brutality of it, the way she was befriended by this Scarlett. She had anxiety and all that anyway, you know, and to have that trust with someone who's meant to be a friend. and the thought of her just on that bus, not realising what's going to happen, it's just very difficult. I don't think I could ever get it out of my head.
Brianna's father also addressed his thoughts on whether Jenkinson and Ratcliffe should be granted the opportunity of rehabilitation behind bars.
I have no feelings. Well, there's only anger towards them. If I'm honest, I hate them. They're just evil, you know, for what they've done. And I don't think they'll ever change. I think they'll always be monsters. And that's what they are to me. That's my feelings with them. They're just a pair of monsters.
During an interview with Good Morning Britain, Brianna's mother shared the same sentiment. She also showed a tremendous amount of compassion, not for Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe, but for their parents.
I think the fact that they both pointed the finger at each other, it also shows that they're cowards, really, and it shows the character of each of them. I think I always get emotional when I think about the parents, because I saw how they were in court and like how distraught they were when the verdict came through. I could see myself in them, the way that I felt when I heard that Brianna had been murdered. And yet they've also lost a child, and they've not only lost a child, but they've got to deal with like what's happened for the rest of their life now. I also think that, like, when do we stop blaming the parents at what age? Nobody wants their child to commit such a crime. Nobody sets out to bring a child up like that. So yeah, that's why I felt that people needed to show some empathy and compassion to them as well, because I don't think they need a constant reminder of what their child has done. They know very well what their child has done.
In October of 2023, the UK Office of Communications signed the Online Safety Act into law, a bill intended to better protect youth online while mitigating the risk that comes with viewing illegal and harmful material on the internet. In theory, ways of doing this would be limiting the access of minors to certain online platforms and digital applications in the UK. In the bill's infancy, Brianna Jai's mother feels the current draft of the Online Safety Act is currently failing to adequately protect children online. Brianna's killers were essentially able to formulate the entire murder through online communication, including WhatsApp and text messaging. Scarlett Jenkinson was also able to access the dark web using a Tor browser, which the courts ultimately deemed to be a partial motivating factor in her ever-growing fantasy to one day commit a murder herself. Since Brianna's murder, Esther Jai has campaigned to ban the use of smartphones for kids under the age of 16. And since the trial, that petition has garnered more than 90,000 signatures. Additionally, the Mindfulness in Schools Project has since been born, an initiative created by Esther and the Warrington Guardian newspaper, which hopes to provide a modern and more updated training module for teachers and schools in Warrington, England, and eventually across the UK. The program was built with a specific focus of guiding children through their negative emotions in hopes of preventing negative or, like in this case, deadly action. The online fundraiser has surpassed its initial goal of £50,000, having raised over £77,000 at the time of releasing this episode. Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Ratcliffe are both serving the first few years of their sentences in juvenile prison, and they will then be transferred and integrated into UK's adult prison system come their 18th birthdays. A milestone of maturity and adulthood that they so coldly stole from Brianna Jai.